The service schedule is nearly identical to last year, same with operating budget. We've shifted some boats around, but the service itself is basically the same.
Tonight on the KRBD Evening Report, the Alaska Marine Highway's fall, winter, and spring schedule is out without much change from last year, and a local man was arrested over the weekend for allegedly stabbing another man. Those stories and more coming up. First, here's a look at the local weather. Tonight, we'll have numerous rain showers with lows in the mid-50s and southeast winds to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, we'll see scattered rain showers with highs around 60 and southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, we'll have rain with lows in the mid-50s and southeast winds to 15 miles per hour. You're listening to the KRBD Evening Report. I'm your host, Layla Carey. The Alaska Marine Highway System has begun taking reservations for fall, winter, and spring sailings. Spokeswoman Aura Landau says the newly released ferry schedule covers travel from October through April.
The service schedule is nearly identical to last year, same with operating budget. We've shifted some boats around, but the service itself is basically the same.
The shifting will allow the ferry Matanuska to undergo significant upgrades. Captain John Falvey is the Marine Highway's general manager.
We're going to have new engines, new auxiliary equipment, basically a new engine room, and it doesn't stop at the engines. It'll go from the reduction gear all the way through the shafting, all the way out to the props and rudders.
He says the work will cost about $36 million using mostly federal funding. The schedule was released August 10th after a shorter-than-usual public comment period. That's because the legislature made its budget decisions in late June, months beyond the usual deadline. A 23-year-old Ketchikan man was arrested this weekend and charged with first-degree assault for allegedly stabbing another man in the neck. According to the Ketchikan Police Department, police were called to Front Street at around 2 a.m. Saturday for a report of a man bleeding. Officers found a man who'd been stabbed in the neck. After interviewing witnesses, police arrested the 23-year-old man. Officers were unable to locate the weapon. The suspect was taken to Ketchikan Correctional Center, where he remains pending a hearing to set bail. The victim was taken to the hospital for treatment. Skagway Magistrate Susan Reed retired at the end of July. Since then, the court has been without a local judicial officer, and that position isn't set to be filled anytime soon. Court system officials say the long-term plan is for a magistrate judge in Haines to handle cases from both Upper Lynn Canal courts. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
In a time of shrinking budgets, the Alaska court system is looking at ways to save money while still serving rural courts. Haines was one of the first communities in Southeast to feel the effects of court budget cuts. When its longtime magistrate retired in 2016, the job was not filled right away. Now, Skagway is in the same position. Magistrates are judicial officers who preside over cases most common for small towns, like minor offenses and protective orders. Since Reed's resignation, Skagway hearings are being handled remotely by magistrates in Yakutat and Wrangell. Trevor Stevens is the presiding Superior Court judge for the 1st Judicial District, which includes Haines and Skagway. He says the futures of both courts are connected.
We'll be looking at putting a judicial officer likely in, I think, in Haines that would cover both Haines and Skagway.
Instead of replacing both magistrate positions, Stevens says the plan is to eventually hire a full-time or close to full-time magistrate in Haines who would remotely serve Skagway. The timeline of when that would happen is unclear. About 8 months ago, the court system found a short-term staffing fix for Haines in retired judge and local resident Lynn Asper. Asper is presiding over the Haines court part-time. Here's Stevens.
And he agreed to basically roll that over and continue for this current fiscal year. So that's continuing.
So, in the near future, Asper will continue in his role at the Haines court. In Skagway, the court system is hiring for a part-time clerical position. The clerk will be the only Skagway-based staffer. Day-to-day judicial matters will be handled by magistrates out of Yakutat and Wrangell for now.
It's budget. We can't, given the case numbers, I don't know that we would get approval to put another magistrate judge in there, at least for the time being.
In fiscal year 2017, Haines had about twice as many district court case filings as Skagway. but Skagway did see a large increase in cases between 2016 and 2017. The number more than quadrupled from 25 in 2016 to 115 in 2017. The majority of cases were classified as minor offenses and misdemeanors. Clayton Jones provides administrative support for the 1st Judicial District. He held a community meeting in Skagway to talk about the court situation.
We learned that although Skagway is small in numbers, they let us know that Skagway is an important community in Southeast Alaska. They expressed concern about not having a local court presence and would like to see, at a minimum, a clerical presence in their community.
Jones will hold a similar meeting in Haines on August 29th. It's at 7 p.m. at the local court. He says he hopes to hear Haines residents' feedback on court services in this time of transition. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Residents in a homeless encampment in Juneau are facing a new deadline to vacate the downtown property. Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has notified the city that it wants its property cleared of trespassers in 2 weeks. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
About a dozen campsites sprang up this summer at the former Subport property off Egan Drive. Wynn Menefee, deputy director of the Trust Land Office, says the property needs to be cleared of trespassers by September 5th.
We have a growing number of complaints about impacts from the homeless camp, and it's not just on the Mental Health Trust property right there. It has expanded. But we also are trying to help these people transition to a different location.
The Mental Health Trust has reached out to the city and social care agencies about relocating people in advance of the deadline.
We have been working up to this transition, but we're trying to do it in a way that it gives the people that are residing at the homeless camp the ability to move in a dignified fashion over something else.
The city estimates about a dozen people have been living on the two-acre parcel. The land trust is in talks to sell an adjacent parcel and wants the area cleaned up. Deputy City Manager Mila Cosgrove says the city is trying to make the transition as seamless as possible.
We recognize that folks are camped out there, and our goal would be to connect them in with other services available in the community.
She says the city is considering extending operation of the city-run campground south of downtown that normally closes in mid-October due to avalanche danger.
We still have space available in the Thane campground, so in terms of a sort of a like environment, that also exists.
Social care agencies have said the lack of transport to the Thane campground, which lies 2 miles down an unlit road, makes it unsuitable for homeless people with disabilities. Shelter space is also at a premium. The Glory Hole, a downtown shelter and soup kitchen, has been running above capacity.
It's not unusual in the winter for us to sleep, you know, over capacity, but it's definitely very unusual for this time of the year. Definitely creates a pretty stressful atmosphere.
That's Executive Director Maria Lovischuk. She says 46 people were housed overnight Thursday in the 40-bed shelter, and clearing the camp will likely increase pressure.
You know, they would certainly not turn anybody away due to lack of space, but it will be pretty hard to house more people.
Earlier this year, the Juneau Assembly passed an ordinance prohibiting camping on private property in the downtown core. After some homeless people moved onto public property, including Marine Park, Juneau police officers began enforcing park hours. There may be some relief to Juneau's homelessness crisis. The 32-bed Housing First apartment complex is due to open next month. It's designed to house Juneau's most vulnerable homeless residents. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Annan Wildlife Observatory near Wrangell is one of Southeast Alaska's most prized bear viewing spots. KFSK's Nora Sachs ventured out to Annan to see the changes firsthand.
Carrie Klein leans against the railing of a wooden platform at the Annan Wildlife Observatory, laughing out loud at the black bear drama she's spying on below.
This baby, I think, is trying to learn how to get salmon. And instead of getting a live one, it went in, waded in and got a dead one, and brought it up, and is now chawing on the dead salmon that doesn't look very appealing through my binoculars.
Klein lives in Brooklyn. It's her first time seeing bears like this in the wild. She says it's been
unbelievable. For somebody from New York where everything's about people, this is not about us.
At its heart, Annan is really about fish. The creek here is one of the most productive salmon streams in the region. And that abundance has attracted people for a long time. It's been an important Tlingit cultural and fishing site for thousands of years, and it also attracts bears, lots of them. Forest Service staff estimate there are 50 to 60 black bears and around 15 to 20 brown bears that feast on the salmon banquet in the height of the season. Now, the bears themselves are the major magnet. That's because here at Annan, you don't just watch bears eat and play and fight from a safe viewing deck perched high above the action. You also share the trail with them. Just now, a juvenile black bear has decided to stop right in the middle of the path, a few yards away. It sits down and lazily scratches its cheek with a hind paw. Luckily, the Forest Service's site manager, Trina Wade, is at the front of the group.
Oh, bear! Trying to be like they're submissive, but they don't care. They do it to other bears, too.
Yeah.
But they're not really concerned about you.
Her emphatic foot stomping, hand clapping, and firm instructions eventually convince it to continue on its way. And she never touches the shotgun she carries on her shoulder. Over time, bears here have become habituated to human presence. Agency staff and tour operators teach visitors how to behave safely and predictably around bears. And they've got it pretty dialed in. There have been no major human-bear conflicts since the early 1990s. Now, as Annan continues to grow in popularity, the Forest Service is less occupied with dangerous bear behavior and more concerned with how to help humans from being a hazard to themselves. This is evident in Phase 1 of the Master Plan, which was just completed. Some of the changes are subtle, but one obvious one is the toilet situation. Outdoor recreation planner Dee Gala has worked here for 2 decades. She remembers when one of the outhouses was tucked back in the woods, away from the main viewing platform.
And that area right there, where it crossed, is one of the main avenues for the bears. And so we were always, you know, having bear encounters with people. And people would get stuck at the outhouse for like 15, 20 minutes sometimes.
There's a new outhouse up there now, built securely inside the protective railing, and a fancy double vault toilet near the trailhead, which doubles the old one's capacity. Sections of trail have been smoothed out and are now barrier-free. And a new, wider bridge over the lagoon lookout point provides a safe place for folks to stop and take pictures without creating a bottleneck. All in all, these Phase 1 renovations cost around $470,000. Wrangell District Ranger Bob Dalrymple and other agency officials were there for the ribbon-cutting ceremony and the unveiling of all the upgrades. Dalrymple says that money for construction improvement projects like this one is especially tight.
We competed for that funding against all the projects in the region, and this just came up. It was our time, I guess, and it just weighed out in the need for it and the benefit of it.
With this project winning out, there isn't money left for other recreation work on cabins or trails in the district, a sore spot with some locals and tour operators. Annan is not a profit-making venture for the Forest Service. Since 2003, the number of visitors has been capped at 60 per day during the two-month peak season. Each visitor permit costs just $10. That permit revenue doesn't come close to covering staff time or site upkeep. But there is a spillover effect. Almost 3,000 people visit Annan per year. Most of them are tourists who pay hundreds of dollars to take a guided trip to this remote site accessible only via boat or float plane. And then they spend more money in Wrangell. Wrangell's Economic Development Director, Carol Rushmore, says,
it's very huge. They estimate that people that actually go to Annan spend over $1,000 per person. That's what they're contributing to the economy.
A group of those international tourists is about to head back to town. They stride down a new staircase, artfully laid into the rock formation, and hop easily into their boat. Julia Horsborough from Melbourne, Australia, had these parting words.
It was like stepping into heaven.
The Forest Service plans to roll out more improvements in its master plan over the next few years, as funding allows. Reporting at Annan, I'm Nora Sachs.
You've been listening to the KRBD Evening Report. I've been your host, Layla Carey.